Ricky was my, he was a special kid. When he was a small child, they picked on him a lot, but he was a handsome young man, and he did get to be popular. When he first went to jail, I don't remember when the first time was. He was in, I know he was in North Carolina then. Got out from down there, and he come up here then. He probably was up here a few years, and he got locked up for a year for the drugs. So.
I'm Annalisa Nielsen. Welcome to the first episode of Unconditional, a podcast miniseries about what it's like to be a mother whose child is sent to prison. Over the course of this project, we'll meet six women, all mothers of criminals. For the first episode, I'll introduce you to my grandma.
My name is Yvonne.
She lives in the southwestern part of Virginia. My mom, who is my grandmother's daughter, married a Canadian, so I was born and raised in Canada. But we often would visit my grandparents at Easter or for a week in the summer. They live in the Appalachian Mountains in coal mining country, where both of my grandparents were born and raised.
It was a poor section. We were all poor. Hardly anybody knew it. Had a good childhood, really. And my mother was one of the best you could have. My dad had an alcohol problem, and he kept that until I left home, and he gave it up, and he was a wonderful father then. Couldn't ask for no better. I'm very passionate about things. I hate it when I see discrimination of any kind going on, and I can remember always being that way, even in school. If I saw a kid being picked on, that was my friend. Or if I saw a little puppy in the road going to get hit with a car, I'd try to knock him out before the car got there. There's just a thing in me that wants everybody to be okay.
When my grandma was in the eighth grade, her father told her that she didn't have to go to school anymore. And he actually said that if she chose to go on to school, she wasn't allowed to date until she was finished. She went on to high school, and then to nursing school after that. Once she graduated, she married my grandpa, Rex, and they had four kids, three boys and a girl, who is my mom. My uncle Rick is her youngest son.
He had a speech problem when he was a kid. And he had a hard time in school. Kids picked on him a lot, and even a lot of adults teased him and picked on him. We got him in speech class, and he learned how to talk pretty good, and he got pretty good at it. Fact is, he was a good salesman. He found out he could be popular, and I think it was very important to him that other people like him. And I think he did fall into a lot of stuff just to get people to like him. He would just try anything to make them laugh, and everybody loved him. Everybody loved to talk to him. And they still do.
Rick was a handsome man growing up. He has dark hair and dark eyes. But in all of my memories of my Uncle Rick, he has this decent-sized beer belly, and he's always wearing a baseball cap to cover up his balding head. He has a really infectious laugh, and I always remember him being very kind. When I was talking to my grandma, this one story in particular came to mind, and I think it sums up pretty nicely what kind of man my Uncle Rick is.
I remember, I was thinking recently, but I remember one time Robin and I...
Robin is my cousin. She's about my age.
We got a bunch of your pasta and your dried beans, and we went into the back on the porch. It was really hot that day, so we were trying to cook the beans and pasta on the porch, and we didn't even have a pot. We were just, like, putting them on the porch, trying to cook them with, like, a little tiny bit of water, and then we put them on plates, and we were trying to make people eat them, and Rick ate it. Rick ate a little bit of it. And it was gross.
That's Rick. That's Rick. He just wants to please people. He wants to be have a friend. There's a lot of good memories with Rick. There's a lot of pleasant things.
It's hard to pinpoint when things really started going wrong for Rick. Even my grandma doesn't remember a specific moment. She does remember going to visit him in North Carolina, where he had been living for some time, and he wouldn't even come see her at the door.
He was high then. That's when I knew that he was then doing hard drugs, and he probably had been for a long time. But he kept it from us pretty much until things started falling apart for him. He had a girlfriend that she was just a really nice lady. And I think he really cared for Tammy, but he was pretty far gone.
Rick has had trouble with the law for a while. He's gotten DUIs here and there, spent a few nights in jail. But several years ago, Rick was arrested for possession and distribution, and he spent over a year in prison.
When Ricky went to jail, it was a relief to me. I knew he had spiraled so far down that either he was going to die on the road or somebody else was going to die on the road that he was responsible for. And I think the nightmare for me was that one day a cop would come to my door and tell me that Rick had killed somebody else in an accident. Yeah, I slept a lot better at night after he was locked up. And it's not because I don't love him. It's because I love other people too.
After Rick finished serving his time, he really struggled to get back on his feet. He couldn't go back to his old job as a car salesman, and he really struggled to get any job at all. He worked for a while at McDonald's for minimum wage, but that's barely enough to get by. Before long, Rick broke his parole, and just recently he was arrested once again for possession with intent to distribute. This was Rick's third arrest in a short period of time in the state of Virginia, and Virginia still abides by the three-strike policy, so we were all really worried that Rick was going to go to prison for a really long time.
I was worried. At 77, I was worried that I would never see my son again because I had already told him that if he got locked up again, I would not come to see him in prison. I would not visit prison to see my son. And I figured I would be going to my grave not seeing him no more. That's just the way I thought it would be. It's torturous to go there to see my son behind bars. And I did go to jail to visit him. One time, I think it was on Christmas Day. I broke my rule on that, but I haven't been back. He's trying to straighten up now. He's trying to get things going. And I do plan to see him again. I didn't even plan to do that. But he has come a long way. And if he can get himself straight, he's going to church. If he can do that, I can face it now. And if he can get himself straight, there should be some blessings down the road.
Thankfully, Rick is on track now to be released before too long. He's actually started in a rehabilitation program that seems to be helping him a lot, so we're all really hopeful for that. But at the time, hearing that my grandmother might never see her son a free man again, I was really struck by what a horrible feeling of loss that must be as a mother. I mean, Rick isn't dead. He's alive. He's just not in her life anymore. That helplessness and that complicated feeling of loss, I can't imagine what that must be like as a parent. I was actually named after my grandma. My middle name is Yvonne. Annalisa Yvonne Nielsen. but I inherited a lot of other things from her as well, especially her southern temper and tenacity. Maybe tenacity is just a nice way to say stubbornness.
I think those are all traits that I inherited from you, and those are things that I like about myself, and they're things that I really like about you. And I've thought about how, while I like those things about myself, those are also the things that I get the most criticism on. And I'm often told that I'm too loud, or I'm too opinionated, or I need to keep my mouth shut more. They're things that are seen as flaws by other people.
When people criticize you for all those things, they are criticizing you because you are a woman that believes in yourself. If you stop doing that, you're going to stop being yourself. I don't mean that you have to fight and be in a fight all the time. I mean you have to stand up for yourself.
I've thought about how my mom is the same with my mom. People treat her that way too. And, you know, when they like it that she's opinionated and then she's loud, then you're all of a sudden this strong southern woman who's, you know, a bit of a badass who raised this strong woman. But then I've thought about how if they know everything with Ricky, then how does that change the way that they think about you? And how that's not fair.
What I'm really trying to get at here is the heart of why I wanted to work on this project. My mom is a very successful female engineer. She's one of the most loving people that I know, but she's also one of the toughest. And she had to be that way to work her way up in a male-dominated career. When she tells people about my grandma, this southern woman who worked her way out of poverty by staying in school and becoming a nurse, this woman who wears a pink pussy hat in the middle of the deep south, knowing that she's alienating herself from her Trump-supporting neighbors. When people hear these stories, knowing my mom, who, according to society, has been a success, then they see these traits as admirable. But if they hear these things knowing her son, who now is in prison, I wonder whether these traits would be seen as flaws. Would they see that tough, determined southern lady? Or just another example of failed rural America.
I have a daughter that is doing darn good. She is doing very good. I have a son that's next to her, and he's the one that's in jail. Why should I feel to blame for either one? I won't take the responsibility for the goodness that Camille done. I will not take the responsibility for the bad things Rick done.
A lot of people have asked me why I chose to only talk to the mothers of prisoners for this project. It's definitely not because I think the fathers of prisoners don't struggle with these same feelings. But I do think that the expectations are much higher for women when it comes to parenting, and so the blame is much greater when their children do something socially unacceptable.
Whatever he does, he's my son. I don't take no blame for him. But I do want Rick to do better for himself. I want Rick to be happy with who he is. I want him to look in a mirror and say, I've done okay. But for me, I don't think I could change Rick. I really don't think I could change Rick. I don't even try to change Rick anymore. I wouldn't know how. All families has problems. Wealthy families, poor families that don't have anything, people that have too much, people love too much, people don't love enough. It has no feelings for any of them. Has none. It can happen to anybody, a church-going person, or a person who don't believe in God. Drugs can happen. It happens to anybody. I'm no different from anybody else.
Over the next 5 episodes, we'll be hearing from 5 different women. They are teachers, social workers, activists, single moms, fitness instructors, grandmothers, data analysts, opera singers, and all of them are the mother of a criminal. I hope you listen. I hope you learn something. I hope you feel something. Welcome to Unconditional. Unconditional is produced by me, Annalisa Nielsen. Music by Chad Crouch, aka Poddington Bear. Special thanks goes to Louise Leonardi of the Canadian Families and Corrections Network. This episode was made possible by Paul Aflalo, Lauren Bridle, and the rest of my classmates in the documentary media program at Ryerson University. Thank you to Vid Ingelvicks and Don Snyder for consultation assistance. Thank you to my family for supporting me while I was working on this project. And thank you to my grandma for inspiring this project, for allowing me to share her story, and for supporting me and believing in me during this whole process.